Daniel chapter 1. Everybody find Daniel chapter 1. We're going to read a rather lengthy section of Scripture. I won't spend time when I preach on every single line, but we're going to read most of, probably the whole chapter. Are we ready? Now, before we stand, you need to keep one thing in mind. Daniel chapter 1 is a man's personal testimony. It's not religion. It's not piosity. It's a real person in a very unfriendly environment telling his story. So what you read here is Daniel explaining his life. Now, Daniel's going to do a whole lot of other things. He's going to talk about prophecy in the future. But in chapter 1, he's talking about his life in a very unfriendly place. Let's all stand. Daniel chapter 1 verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. By the way, as Frenchie learned in Sunday school, the northern 10 tribes have been gone for a long time. Since 722 BC, they were carried captive, 10 tribes. There are two tribes left, Judah and Levi, and remnants of the other 10. In the third year of the reign of King Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it. Babylon is the land between the rivers. If your name is Pachungai, you say Mesopotamia. Babylon, Iraq, okay? Verse 2, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. He said, what happened to our nation? God gave our king and our nation into the hand of the Babylonians. With part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land, this is another term for Babylon, Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Aspenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes. Now remember, this is the first captivity. Excuse me, it wasn't 586. This is 606. I got myself confused. 586 is Jeremiah. This is the first captivity where the aristocracy is removed from the land. Daniel was probably royalty of one variety or another. So the king wants this prince of the eunuchs to train some of these guys. Verse 4. Children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored, skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom he might teach the learning and the tongue, the language of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat or food, and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end they might stand before the king. And that doesn't mean stand up here so I can look at them. They could become counselors to the king if you pass the test. Verse 6 is something you'll need to reflect on. Now among these, which implies there were a bunch of them, but among them that did what was right were four. Children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. It's sad that we never call them by their biblical names. We call them by their pagan names. Unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. For he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. So every single one of those names look at me, folks, the Jewish names either ended in A-H in English, Yah for Yahweh, or E-L, El or Elohim. Every name was a believing name. And what did he do with the names? He changed them to pagan names, every single one of them. Verse 9. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's, and meat is improper, food, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. We're assuming the wine would have been intoxicating, which Daniel would not have partaken of, and probably the food had been offered to false gods. So he didn't want to participate in that. Verse 9, now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, No, I don't think so. I fear my lord the king who hath appointed you, has appointed your food and your drink. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. So Daniel goes to the prince of the eunuchs, and the prince of the eunuchs basically says, no, I'm not doing that. So then Daniel does what? Then said Daniel to Melzar, we don't know who he is, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set up over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So he goes not to the top dog, but to a dog underneath the top dog, and says same things. He says, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, I beg thee, 10 days, and let them give us, and it's hard to know exactly what this is. Basically, we're not going to drink the intoxicating alcohol, and we're not going to eat the meat sacrificed to idols. We want to have, you know, something other, maybe vegetables, maybe, and water. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. And basically, by the way, I'm assuming the rest of the Jewish people that were there did what? They went right along with the process, of course. That's what most people do. Most people fit in. Verse 14. So this Melzar, it says, he consented to them in this matter and proved them. He put them to the test 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat of the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and our food and wine which they drink, and he gave them whatever this is, vegetables or whatever. Verse 17, and as for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them and talked with them, and among them all was none found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they became the king's counselors. They stood before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them. This is Daniel's testimony. What did he find them? 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even until the first year of King Cyrus. Actually, we'll learn later, he lived at least until the third year of King Cyrus, which was a Persian king, not a Babylonian king. What we're going to do today, I told you a few weeks ago, I'm going to preach things that I have dealt with in the past because we have a new church here. And I've also learned that some people didn't hear it the first time around. So I'm going to preach something that's fresh, but we're going to deal with this testimony of 10 times better. And here's where I want to start. Are you all ready? There are 3 kinds of choices. And when you leave here this morning, I want you to know the 3 kinds of choices. The first one, you or I, we make choices. Is that correct? Number two, God makes choices. Does God make choices? And number three, other people make choices. This story is about choices or decisions. And there are 3 people that make choices. God makes choices. I or we make choices. And other people make choices. In the story, what we find is a young man's testimony where he had come through a process where he was 10 times better because he knew how to deal with those 3 choices. Now, in this room, Some of us are good at one and not the other. I can only preach them in an order, you understand. I think some old people struggle with God's choices. I think some young people struggle making right choices. And I think most of us struggle how we deal with other people's choices. But here's our life. My choices, God's choices, other people's choices. Can you remember that past leaving the service this morning? What we're going to do is talk about how we deal with God's choices, my choices, other people's choices. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for this text. It is a great text. There's none better in the sense of what it talks about. It is so clear, it is so helpful, it is so practical. Help me this morning to be able to encapsulate these truths for every person in this room. This I ask in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. God's choices, say it with me, God's choices, my choices, other people's choices. Say it with me, God's choices, my choices, other people's choices. That's our life. That's the life you live. So let's go back. I don't know what year it was. 1992 is before I became pastor here. The church I pastored in St. Louis, I set it up similarly to this, though the auditorium was much smaller. This is a big gym, in the sense that the pulpit was in the side, actually exactly like this. You know, the last thing you want to do is put a pulpit on that end and preach to people down here. By the way, that's the way it had been set up for years. My first week there, actually before I went there, I said, you need to change that. Because I don't want to have to, it's bad enough that you sit in the back row. Think about if you're sitting over there and I'm sitting over there. I like a wraparound. So we changed it. But the difference was in our building in St. Louis, we had not exits to the outside, but exits to the hallway in the two corners. We didn't have a center section. You went out either doors over there or doors over there. It was a Sunday morning. Sunday school was just wrapping up. And for some reason, someone had left the doors open on both sides and opened them up. So I'm up at the front. I'm teaching Sunday school. And I look back to the left door, which is the door to the hallway that also went outside. As I look back there, I saw a couple coming in right when I'm closing up the service. I knew that I didn't know them, and then I saw something very strange. There was a child, I assumed, and I cannot do it. It's hard to even explain it, but I immediately knew something was wrong with the child because the child was like seated on her knees and was walking with her hands. You remember this, don't you? It was a strange motion. I didn't know what it meant, but I saw them come in, and then, by the time I'd prayed and I looked up, and the Sunday school was breaking up, they were at the other door, and they were walking past that door. Well, they came into the service. Good-looking young couple in their late 20s, mid to late, I think probably late 20s. Nice-looking couple. They had this daughter. I knew they had a daughter. I didn't know anything about her. That week I visited them, and over the next couple weeks they told me their story. No, they didn't. They lied. As only Christians can lie. And I say that to all of you Christians out there that know you're saved. As only a Christian can lie. They told me part of their story. They talked about this daughter, and this daughter, when she was born, was born with very severe birth defects. Now, Jenny, you might remember, did it affect her mind? I cannot remember. But it affected her physically, extreme physical defects. And she could get around, but she got around kind of like a duck would get around, you know, just like this with her hands. After a few weeks, maybe 2 weeks, they joined our church. I don't mind telling you their first names because I don't know that I even remember their last names. His name was Tim. Her name was Diane. She was a redhead, and I mean one of those red that shows up 2 miles away. Good-looking young lady. Found out her dad was a pastor. Her dad was a Fundamental Baptist pastor. Actually, we visited their church a couple times on vacation. Her dad was a pastor, and after a while I found out her husband had been a pastor. I should have been listening. I should have been thinking, but I wasn't. I was young and didn't realize Christians lie about some things. Sad to say. They joined our church. They sang in the choir. She had a wonderful soprano voice. It wasn't professional, but it was right under professional. I mean, she was right on everything. Great singer. He sang in the choir too. Remember, I used to sing in the choir there too, so you understand what that means. he sang in the choir, and he kind of sounded like me singing in the choir. Everything was good until all of a sudden they were gone. They came Sunday morning. They came Sunday night. I don't know if they came Wednesday because I think his job kept him from coming. Maybe she came. But after 6 months, 9 months, they were just gone. And I'm like, what happened? I call them and I call them and I call them and I didn't get a reply and I didn't get a reply. And I called them back and I didn't get a reply. And I'm like, what in the world is going on? I finally went and visited them. And the wife told me the truth for the first time. When they got married, young couple, in love, you know the feeling? Some of you can't remember back that far, but you're in big trouble, buddy. If you can remember back to when you were in, were you ever in love, sister, or were you just hoodwinked? Did he pay you money is what I want to know. Anyhow, I'm being funny. When they got married, they wanted to have children, and they both graduated from a Bible college. They got out of Bible college, went right into the ministry. When they showed up on their doorstep, they were maybe 2 or 3 weeks outside of being a youth pastor, and I didn't know. But that wasn't the problem. They had this daughter with these birth defects. And the couple weeks before they came to our church, maybe a month, they'd had a son that was born. And the son immediately died. And guess what? The wife had a genetic problem. And every child they would have ever had would have had extreme birth defects or die at birth. You say, why is this important? Let's see if you can remember. God makes choices. We make choices. Other people make choices. The first choices you and I have to deal with is God's choices. Now, what do we do with God's choices? Number one, we must come to do this. You can use either word. Accepting God's choices, or if you prefer a stronger word, look at me, embracing God's choices. Because God makes choices. And he doesn't ask our opinion. And he doesn't hold our hand. And he doesn't pat us on the head. He just makes choices. And sometimes those choices are not the ones we like. Now, where do you find that at, Pastor Warren? Glad you asked. Look back at verse 1 and 2, would you please? In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. This was his first of three conquering of the city. King of Babylon unto Jerusalem, and he did what? He besieged it. Look at the next line. What does the next line say, friend? And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. And it says also with part of the vessels of the house of God. And verse 4, well, 3 and 4 talks about these, you know, these people that were carried away, of which Daniel was one. So you say, where do you get this idea? God makes choices. Our job is coming to accept or embrace God's choices. Folks, God makes choices. And they're not always the choice we want. Now, let's see if I can say this so you can understand. And it's hard because, frankly, we can't think long enough to think about things. Here is a young man. I see Isaac back here. I see some two handsome young men over there. Who are the old guys over here? Where are there some young guys? Christian here? Tupper the second? Young man here, how old are you, buddy? The Filipino guy in the back. Yeah, that's young. That's real young. So let's just pretend, I'm being serious, that we're all living in Jerusalem. And one day the city is surrounded. And they come into the city. Do you think they come into the city and say, how are you doing? They came into the city. They pillaged the city. Forgive me. They killed people. What do people do in war? They rape their women. And they gather together some of the aristocracy. One of those young men is named Daniel. Three of the other guys is Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they take those guys from their home, and they take them all the way to Babylon. So you have now lost your home. You'll never come back. You have now lost your family. You're never seeing your family again. You have now lost your culture. You're never going to enjoy the culture in which you grew up. You have now lost the sounds, the sights, the smells, the cuisine that you grew up with. You've even lost your language. Now, I'm guessing he kept the language, but the language that he was forced to learn was another language. I got to say this delicately. Though some people try to disagree, I don't know why. He was in charge, the guy in charge of him was the prince of the what? Do I need to spell out what a eunuch is? I'm asking you a question. Most males, the thought of that, they would rather die than that happen to them. And here is Daniel telling his story. And what does Daniel say? The Lord gave my king, my city, and myself into the hands of the Babylonians. Daniel is telling us how we deal with all of God's choices is accepting, or if you prefer, embracing God's choices. And all of us have to embrace God's choices. I always wanted to be handsome. Well, that didn't work out so well. I always wanted to be thin. My mother picked on me recently. My own mother, Mom, why would you say these things to me? She says, you used to be skinny. I said, yes, 45 years ago. Now, I'm not being funny. Has God made choices in your life you don't like? Yes or no? God makes choices. This morning, actually yesterday, I don't know why it came to my mind. Yeah, I do. Jenny mentioned one of her and my by marriage nieces. You have how many kids? There's four in the family, Scott and Sally's family. There is Jonathan. Jonathan has a PhD in history and postdoctoral work. He's a professor. Daniel works in Michigan in a university. Rebecca's a nurse, got a good family. And there's JoJo. Four kids. Do you realize both of those kids lost both of their parents? How old was Sally? Scott was about 50. He was 57. They lost both of their parents. They don't have parents. My friend, everybody in this room suffers loss. Now, old people, here's the problem. Some of them can never accept who they are, how God made them, where God put them. There's always this. You say, why did God let this happen? There comes a place in time where your why sound really intelligent, and then there comes a place in time when your why is an abomination to God, because there has to come a place where you say, the Lord gave Jehoiakim into the hand of the king of Babylon. God makes choices. I must embrace them. I'm looking at my buddy Tonki out here. If you don't know who Tonki is, he has a lot more hair than his dad has, so he is more pogi. Chris, you have boot camp, right? I think back to the day I went to boot camp. Actually, it was April. I went down to the AFI station in Alton, Illinois. I've told the story. I went there with three of my buddies, Ronnie Crank, Bruce Kendall, and Mike Whitlock. The three of us guys went there. I was number four. We were going to join. This is an abomination. I was going to join the Marine Corps. We went to the AFI station, not the AFI station, the recruiting place at Alton, and it was a little bitty place, and each group had a little, the Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marines had a little room, and we went to the Marine room, and there was just room for three guys, and I said, I'll wait out here, and I'll come back. And I'm standing out there, and the Navy guy comes in and says, well, we talked for a minute. He says, you're waiting on your friends. Why don't you take the test? I still remember that day. I said, sure, I might as well. Why was I joining the Marine Corps? Why would anybody join the Marine Corps? Anyhow, I went over to the Navy recruiter. Hey, listen, went into the Navy recruiter, took the test. Now, it was in those days, I don't know about today, they had two tests. They had the test that they gave you, which was the same test, but they couldn't grade it. So you had to come back and take the official test in another setting. I took that test. That guy walked out after he graded it. You'd have thought he was a Pentecostal speaking in tongues. Because this was the 70s when guys that had only half of a foot and leg were joining the military. Okay, they wanted anybody. If you could read and write, they thought you were special. That guy said, you did exceptionally well on the math. You can do anything in the Navy. He was like so ecstatic. And I'm like, what's the difference between the Marines? I didn't even think about the Navy. You have to swim and things like that. I didn't think about it. All I know is my buddies joined the United States Marine Corps. Are you hearing me? All three of them spent most of their career on a ship. I joined the United States Navy, and I saw a ship one time in a distance in Charleston. I was only in 6 years. They were in four. But hear me. I joined the United States Navy for one reason. He promised me I could go into their nuclear program, and if I could keep my grades up, go through their nuclear engineering program and get a degree. You see, how well did that work out? Were you smart enough? Had nothing to do with smarts. It had something to do with my grandfather. I hate my grandfather. No, I don't. You say, why do you use your grandpa? Because your grandfather passes something along to your mother. It doesn't affect her. Then she passes it on to the sons. Yeah, it's a recessive trait. It's called color blindness. So I'm all pumped up to be a nuclear engineer. I'm thinking I'm going to get this, get a good job. I'll have everything will be set up. And they, right in the middle of boot camp, they tell me, you can't go into the nuclear field because you can't see colors. By the way, I could have told them that when I joined the Navy. I already knew that. Now, why am I telling you this? Please look at me. Every person in this room, God is going to make choices. You say, I think I should have gone to Harvard. There's people that are qualified but never get the opportunity. I think that, by the way, everybody suffers from disappointment. Everybody has to come back to Daniel. And the beauty of Daniel's story is he lost everything. It wasn't like a small thing, because they allowed me then to go to school, and I went to school in D.C., George Washington University, got a degree from that. I did fine from the Navy. But friend, Daniel lost everything. But what does Daniel say? The Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. God makes choices. What do? We accept or embrace God's choices. We must do so. We must do so. Look back down at verse 6, because I think you'll understand this if you read this over a few times. When it talks about these four, it says, now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, which implies there was a bunch of others who probably were embittered. I want to ask you a question. Have you ever met a Christian embittered? Yes or no? Why is it one Christian becomes a bitter, angry, bile-spewing person and the other one goes forward? One difference. Hey, somewhere along the line, the one believer comes to accept or embrace God's choices. I always wanted to. Fill in the blank. What did you always want to do? And if you don't get to do that, there were four, and there was a whole bunch of other Jewish captives. Four of them, I'm assuming, all embraced God's choices. The rest of them, I hate this place. We don't even know their name. Nor probably will we in heaven, because they're probably in the other place. Daniel chapter 1, please, and verse 5. Would you look there? Daniel 1 and verse 5. There's a second kind of choice that comes into our life. God makes choices, and who else? I make choices. We make choices. Say it with me. God makes choices. We make choices. Yes? Accepting or embracing God's choices. Verse 5. It says in the king, and by the way, the king was not trying to be wicked here. You understand. The king was trying to, he was trying to produce something. The king appointed them a daily provision of the king's food. And I'm assuming meat would be part of that as we understand meat. But in 1611, meat meant all kinds of food. And of the wine which he drank. By the way, he gave them what he ate and drank. Do you understand how offensive that would be to turn that down? I'm asking, do you understand how offensive that would be to turn that down? It's what he drinks. By the way, you want to offend somebody from a different culture? Do this stupid thing, Christian. I don't like that kind of food. That is the most obnoxious, offensive thing you can do to another person. What do you mean you don't like their food? Shut up and eat it. By the way, unless it's offered to idols, yes, or unless it's some, I will not drink intoxicating anything. I don't care who offers it to me. We were in Mexico this year when I went to, Jenny and I went to Bambi's brother's wedding, and did they offer us something to drink that was alcoholic at the front? But they do a lot of places. You say, what do? I don't drink it. Thank you very much. I'm a Christian. But if we're just talking about somebody's food, I eat it. You say, what if you don't like it? You got to be kidding me. Do you really think I'm going to suffer from not eating much at one meal? And I'm looking at some of you, you're not suffering either. I better move on in the text here. So he appointed them what he ate and drank with the goal of they could stand before the king, which is an Old Testament, ancient world thing of they could be cabinet ministers, counselors. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Unto the prince of the eunuchs gave names, so he changed all of their believing names into unbelieving names. Daniel, he gave the name Belteshazzar. Hananiah, he gave the name Shadrach, Mishael of Meshach, and of Azariah of Abednego. And then we have, and we only have it from Daniel's perspective, but I'm assuming his three friends did the same thing. Daniel purposed in where? The center of his being, that he would not, and here's where we know it had to be something offered to pagan gods and probably intoxicating, because he says, I'm not going to defile myself with a portion of the king's food, nor with the wine which he drank. It's a defiling matter. This is not a health matter. This is not someone that wants to be a vegan, okay? It's not that. This is something that's defiling morally. So he purposed in his heart that he would not do that. Now, everyone look at me. Here we are. God makes choices. What do? We accept or embrace God's choices. And hear me, he makes lots of choices. I'm not asking you to accept all choices God makes in 1 minute. But over a period of time, you and I must come to embrace God's choices. I'm sure Daniel, the night he was taken captive, if I can say this delicately, the day they made him a eunuch, I'm guessing he wasn't shouting for joy. But somewhere along the way, Daniel realized God made this choice. I'm either going to be bitter my whole life or I'm going to accept it. Which is it going to be? I'm either going to talk about my problems or I'm going to talk about God. And I think God sounds a lot better than my problems. The second issue is not only God makes choices, but we make choices. Daniel, and I think his three friends, purposed in their hearts that they would not, the key word is defile themselves. Whatever this food was, it was some way morally, probably ceremonially, defiling. Wasn't because it was bad food. It had too much grease or whatever. None of that nonsense. It was simply something that would defile him as a believer. So the second concept is making good and godly choices. Accepting God's choices, making good and godly choices. Daniel purposed in his heart. Daniel purposed in his heart. Young men, young ladies, and not so young, your life is not real hard to follow. I talked to two men that I like and respect. Both of them happened about 2 years ago. One is Kevin Bowder, and one was Bob Yarbrough, my professor at Covenant Seminary that's still teaching there. Both men said something to me out of the blue, and I'm like, did you guys talk to each other? This is what he said. He says, I'm sometimes surprised that anybody's still in church. Because once you get a little older and you watch the foolish decisions that adults make, you start wondering. No wonder why so many people, hey, you go to college, Bible college, you go to seminary, master's degree, and the people you go to school with deny the Lord 30 years later. Why? Because somewhere along the line, they made the wrong choices. Hey, you say, Pastor, choices are only for young people. Actually, I'm looking back here at my buddy Junior. I like Junior. He's a pretty handsome fellow. Everybody agree with that? Say amen, Junior. Go ahead. Hey, thank you. Thank you. I knew you agreed. Junior, can you make some bad choices in the next few years? The answer is yes. But I wanted the older people to listen. If he makes some bad choices when he's 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20, he has a lifetime to correct those bad choices. You make a bad choice when you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s and try to correct those choices. You don't have time to get back. I used to think this was for young people. I think this is for all people. Because I believe God brings us to places where we can make bad choices and we can't always get that choice back. Hey, I stand before you today for many reasons. But one of them comes back to November 23rd, 1975, where I was doing some very stupid stuff. Should I say? I'll just say it this way. From November 23rd at 6 p.m. to noon the next day, I had a blackout period. Do you understand blackout? That is the most frightening thing that ever happened to me in my entire life. You say, why did you black out? Because I was drinking too much Pepsi. I can only tell you this. When I woke up the next morning at noon, hey, I promise God, never again with the guy you're looking at ever touch a drop of alcohol or ever have anything to do. All we had back in those days was marijuana. I know we're going to legalize it in this state and peace and love. You know, everything is good. I promised the living God never, ever again. Can I tell you something? The reason I stand here goes back to that day. It's been a long time. 1970, that's 44 years ago. But there's been other choices along the way. And may I say this? I've watched people in this room make some pretty stupid choices. You say, are you speaking to me? I'm not speaking about anything that's currently going on in your mind. I'm just talking reality. People make dumb choices. Do teenagers make dumb choices? Yes. But I say again, normally God gives you a second chance, or you have enough time to get your life back on track. But there comes a period of time, if you make a dumb choice, there just isn't enough life left. You have messed up your life. Life is about choices and their inevitable consequences. We make our choices, and our choices make us. We make our choices, and those choices make other choices. The thing that I like the least is when I make this choice, it makes a lot of other choices, and I didn't even know it. So making these little flippant decisions to do this or that Daniel purposed in the center of his being. This isn't a flippant choice. This is a man centering with the living God to make the right choice. Young men, young ladies, old men, old ladies, you better not play around with your life. And you make a decision. Hey, it better come from the soul, from the center of your being, not a flippant little decision that you think won't matter because, hey, God forgives. Yes, God forgives, even believers. But the consequences, hear me, we make our choices and those choices make many other choices. My unsaved father used to say this, never date somebody you wouldn't want to marry. You say, why did he say that? He would say then, you might fall in love. By the way, you can go to the club and meet a guy, ladies. How's that going to, by the way, you make that choice, and how many other choices does it make? How many? You decide to steal on the job. How many choices does that make? You see, there comes a place where we have to realize my life, God makes choices, I must embrace those. I'm not the best looking guy. Oh, you know, everybody wants to think they're handsome, tall, dark, and debonair. Sooner or later, you got to come to grips with who you are. I came to grips with who I am a long time ago. I got a big head. My body's big, too. You say, are you okay with that? Well, I guess so. What am I going to do? Go into a head shrinking program? Good grief. You say, Pastor, there's surgery for that. Yes, and I always love those women that you can't tell they've had plastic surgery. By the way, there comes a time when you accept God's choices. Hey, young men, the choices you make. Junior, you're how old were you, buddy? You think about this, Junior. Your big choices normally will be made in the next 4, 5, or 6 years. What you're going to do for your life, who you're going to marry. Now look at me, Junior. How you're going to live your life when you're not at home. Are those big choices? Ooh, my goodness. I'll move on because I want to be sweet. We have to move on to the last point. I want you to look back at verse 8. We're going to read this quickly. Daniel, remember, there's how many people make choices? Same with me. God makes choices. We make choices. In this text, you have all three. God made the choice to bring Daniel where he was, and you must embrace that choice. Yes or no? Number two, you have choices to make, and you must make godly, good choices. So it's embracing or accepting God's choices, making good choices yourself, and then what about other people? Well, Daniel purposes in his heart, but Daniel can't make this decision on his own. So in the last part of verse 8, it says, therefore he had to go talk to the prince of the eunuchs that he might, and isn't that funny? I'm not going to do this, but I got to make sure it's okay with the prince of the eunuchs, yes. Because life is not lived by yourself. It even says in verse 9 that God had brought him into favor. Even that didn't help him. Because when he talked to the prince of eunuchs in verse 10, the prince of eunuchs thought, oh, no, 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 no. Because if you end up looking bad, my head's on the line. So hear me. Look up here, folks. God makes choices. I must embracing or accepting God's choices. I make choices, making good and godly choices. Thirdly, adjusting to other people's choices. Or, say it this way, working with other people's choices. So I got to adjust to or work with the choices that other people make. So here, Daniel is not going to defile himself. But how is he going to pull that? So he goes to the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs says, oh, I'm not, no, no. So what does Daniel do? Do you read this text? Daniel then, and by the way, there are people in this room good at this, and other people don't have a clue. He went to the guy under him and said, test me. Test my friends. don't accept my word, give me 10 days, because it was going to be several years before he went before the king. Test me 10 days and see. If we don't eat this food that the king gives us, and we don't drink this wine, this alcoholic wine that the king gives us, test us. What is he doing? Hey, look at me. What is he doing? He's adjusting to and working with other people's choices. You know what your life consists of? God's choices, your choices, other people's choices. Now, this morning, I'm going to speak to Satish, my friend in the back. Satish, when I went to India, everybody in India wanted to know one thing. How's the traffic in India? They said, is it worse than America? Well, everything's worse than America unless you don't haven't been outside this country. They wanted to know if it was worse than the Philippines. So I want to tell you up front, this is public, but there's a reason I'm going here. It's not worse than the Philippines. Actually, it's identical. In the Philippines, there's two rules. Don't hit anybody and don't get hit. And there's one methodology. It's called chicken. When you come up to it, there's no stop signs, please. You just pull up to an intersection, and what's chicken? You stick your nose out there, and whoever wins at playing chicken gets to go. Is that right? You say, is it scary? You got to be kidding me, scary. I'm just like, everybody plays chicken every place. Hold on. There is a big difference between India and the Philippines. The Philippines is islands, and they're small. So the traffic is worse there only because you can only go 2 miles an hour. Sometimes you get up to 3. If it rains in Manila, you don't even get up to 3 miles an hour. You just, the last time I was there, it took me 3 hours from the airport to the hotel, which should have taken me 20 minutes. It's just close. But India is a big country. So it's exactly like the Philippines, except there's spaces for people to drive fast. But people are still playing chicken. You say, how does this help you? I learned something. People from India, I'm assuming Satish, I don't know about Ezra, because did you drive in India? So you're like that too. People in India, listen to me, are experts at adjusting to how other people drive. So we're driving in India, you drive on the wrong side of the road, on the wrong side of the car. And you're driving down the road, and we were driving down there, where Ezra's family, and these are nice highways, two lanes divided. And it's going okay, except every once in a while you drive up behind a car doing 3 miles an hour and you're doing 80. And you start up again. And then you drive and there might be rice in the road. Okay. Then there might be a cow in the road. Indians are excellent drivers at adjusting to the circumstances. The worst thing, Moses was driving Ezra the first full day I was there. Moses is driving from Vijayawada down to where your parents are. And we're driving fast. And I look and at first I go, there's a car coming straight at us on the wrong side of the road. Moses didn't even blink. He just got over on this side. This guy went this way. He went that way. I'm like, so you say, do you remember? I don't remember anything from India because I got on medication after that. Now, I tell that funny story. Is it any different in Cameroon? Not a bit, is it? They play chicken there too, I bet. Yes. Now, I want to tell you this and we're done. Friend, please hear me. Life is made up of God's choices, my choices, and other people's choices. Some of us have a hard time accepting God's choices, yes or no? Some of us can't make good and godly choices if our life depended on it. Because we think good and godly choices come from whims, from emotions. Good and godly choices come from, hey, Josh, you're in my Bible class. I know you well enough to know something. If you want to be doing the right thing 10 years from now, buddy, you better nail it down. This is the direction I'm taking. Because there'll be lots of compromise along the way. And hey, everybody listen, and if you don't nail it down, what happens? That one little choice that I'll go ahead and drink with my buddies, what does that choice do? It makes other choices. Which make? Other choices. And the next thing you know, you're way over there and you can't figure out how to get back to ground central. Hear me, buddy. Make good and godly choices. And for all of us, it's a growth thing when you learn to adjust to and work with other people's choices. But I can see Satish. He looks calm and nice. He is a nice guy. But I can just see him driving, and here comes that car down the wrong road, and I'm going, ah! See, I just freeze up. I'm like, we don't have people drive that fast on the wrongs. And here was old Moses. He just went. You say, did your heart stop? It started back after about 3 minutes. God makes choices. We make choices. Other people make choices. That's our life. Let's pray. Father, thank you for this time.